Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and welcome back for part two of the discussion of the offense in the bye week roster breakdown. You've become familiar with them, I'm sure, after all these years. Joining me, as always, is Brian McFarland. Brian, how you doing?
Good, good. For a Monday evening.
Yeah, great to have you back, Brian. Well, we talked about some young producers in the first show. A lot of offensive line questions came up in the first show. Tyler Lindebaum, Reiser Rosengarten in that young producer category. Tyler's had a difficult year, but he's still there. Roger Rosengarten is playing about as well as he did as a rookie, graded a little bit lower because he's had a little bit less help, in my opinion. And then the developmental class, a whole slew of linemen, and we're about to get into even more of them, but we've talked about Rasheen Ali, Corey Bullock, Daniel Falele, Kenyon Green, and Emory Jones. So four of the first five guys we've talked about in that developmental category are offensive linemen.
Yep. Yeah. Then we've got a couple more to go. I'm curious thoughts on Vincent, actually, but we'll get to him in a couple of minutes. But it's nice to have a lot of developmental offensive linemen. It'd be nicer to see a couple of them already up in the upper category. So maybe that's for next year, but hopefully they'll be able to piece some things together the rest of the year. And maybe we'll see some of these younger guys get a chance if the season goes, and of course Lamar didn't practice today. So if the season goes further downhill, maybe we'll see some of these guys get a chance.
We're recording this on Monday night. And so the Ravens had an off normal schedule or practice on Monday today, and they're going to be practicing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday again, but the Monday practice is just because of the bye week. Lamar was not there. If Lamar's not back on Wednesday, it's time to start getting worried, folks.
Very much.
I mean, we hope he'll be at least if he's limited on Wednesday, I'm feeling pretty good about him playing on Sunday.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, they're not going to throw him out there, and limited should be all he should be doing anyway. just get a little bit of the rust off. We don't need him, running around all over practice and doing stuff like that. So no Superman of practice.
I'm with you on that. So we talked about five developmental players up front. We talked about that a little bit. We have five more to discuss. The first of them is probably the most polarizing figure of all, because he's been inactive for a lot of the season so far, and that's Keaton Mitchell. He has come back to play. Trying to remember if he's been active twice or three times so far, but Rasheen Ali has basically been active in his place for most of the season. And Keaton Mitchell, it was a big deal when he finally got some carries and four snaps in the backfield a couple weeks ago. That was against the Texans. I think it was, because it was a home game.
Yeah.
And it was good to see him at least get out there again. They ran him a couple times in a pony backfield. I've made the point, I thought he was the Ravens' best player in camp and the preseason in terms of just being able to cut and show the speed to the edge was there again that he had as a rookie. Unfortunately, you lose an entire season to this horrific knee injury. You don't know if the player is ever coming back. He did come back. He appears to be pretty good. And now it's just they can't figure out how to get him involved in the offense.
Yeah, it is kind of because he certainly provides a dynamic that, obviously Henry can get up to speed, but it takes him a little while. Mitchell's two steps and he's gone, if there's a crease. So there's definitely a difference there. Third down, pretty much they trust Justice Hill and is blocking so much that, that seems to be not the place they would play Mitchell, and that probably would be the place you'd expect Mitchell to be, trying to get him out on the edge, screens, things like that, third down, a dump off and let him take off. So that is kind of the surprise. You're not taking too many carries away from Henry, obviously. Justice Hill doesn't get many carries anyway. So, and to be honest with you, they've seemed to forget to run a few games this year as well. So that hasn't helped either. So, but if it's the blocking, I get it. Keep in mind, this is his third year. I mean, as you said, he's lost a whole year. So he's a restricted free agent next year. So,
wait a minute. Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's an RFA, not an ERFA. Yes, that's right.
Yes.
They've got to tag him.
So they have to, yes. And he's an undrafted free agent. So they can give him the low tender, which is $3.5 million, but teams could come and they retain the right to match, but they don't, there's no draft pick compensation involved. If not that, it's the second round tender, which is
No
going to be
way.
probably like $5 million. Let me see where OTC does a really good job of projecting these things. But you know, so you're not going there. I mean, he's not done enough to do that, to do that. But you could see it, you know, maybe a team, I don't know. I don't know if a team would go after, try to sign him to an offer sheet or not. But yeah, I mean, that's 3.5. Yeah, I mean, the second round's almost 5.7, so that clearly not going to do that. But and I don't know. I mean, they're using him so little, $3.5 million for what they've been using him for. I'm not saying that's the way he should be used, but the way they've been using, I'm not sure $3.5 million. Now it depends on what happens. We'll get to it in a little bit with Justice Hill. Ali can be back because he's only in his second year. So, but now maybe Justice Hill isn't here next year, and maybe Mitchell steps into that role, and then $3.5 million is, makes sense.
Yeah, and Mitchell could fill that role in many ways. The big one he couldn't is as a pass blocker, because
Yeah.
that's not who he is.
Right.
But it's interesting to me. A whole bunch of questions are flying through my mind as I think about the potential to tender this guy. First of all, they could come to agreement on a deal before the end of the league year, and maybe it's 2 years, 3 million kind of thing or whatever. But he's not yet eligible to earn any of the veteran salary benefit money. You have to play 4 years with the
4 years,
team for
correct.
that. So he has to, they'd have to, and you can't put that into a contract after 3 years for the fourth year, right?
No, you have to be unrestricted free agent for that. Yeah. So, that doesn't happen until after the fourth year.
So 2 years, 5 million might be a possibility on a deal prior to the end of the league year. And that'd be fairly similar to what Justice Hill got, I think, after his rookie deal ran out.
Yeah, I think that would make some sense. And you could structure it so that if things don't work out that first year, it doesn't hurt too much to cut bait the second year if things didn't work out. But yeah. But that's certainly an option and something they could pursue. But obviously they got this trust factor that doesn't seem to exist right now. And I'm not really sure. I don't did he put any balls on the ground in preseason? I don't remember.
No,
Yeah.
he's near
And
perfect.
I mean, I don't know about training camp but seemingly that's not an issue. I mean, that's one way to get in Harbaugh's doghouse is to, keep putting the ball on the ground. So that's not an issue. So I'm not really sure that they just, he just doesn't fit right now with whatever they're trying to do. And that doesn't make a lot of sense, but here we are.
It's an offense fueled by misdirection. The misdirection by Jackson, the mesh point of Jackson and Henry, which is still the most powerful weapon in the game, I say. And he can be a big part of that. Lining up as a flanker, you can call it a pony, or you can call him as a wide receiver or whatever. It doesn't really matter. Call him a pineapple as long as he's on the field and he has a chance to get the football. That also takes away the necessity to use Flowers in those gadget roles, which I think actually hurts and contracts the defense around the offense more. So if you have a Flowers on the outside and you're running him down the field, well, they have to immediately be thinking about how do we attach a safety to him over the top, which takes away from the defense. So anyway, Keaton, I guess the last thing I'll say about this or ask you about this is, do you think there's anything about the Ravens and the way they have used Keaton this year that reeks of them already thinking about next year in terms of how they're going to pay him?
No, I mean, I think it's, I mean, I honestly, the way they've used him makes it seem like they could live without him. They feel like they could live without him more than I think that's at least my prevailing thought. And that's just, the way I'm reading it. And that it could be totally wrong, but I think it's more of that. I've seen him a couple times on trade possibility lists. And that, I mean, I don't see, I don't, yeah, that would be very odd because I don't know what's anybody going to trade for him? You're going to get a fifth, sixth for him? I mean, he's done nothing. I mean, in reality, he's really done nothing in his 3 years or 2.5 years. So what are you going to give him up for? Other than you don't want to next year, you don't want to give him the RFA
Tender.
tender.
Yeah.
So, if you get anything for him, then it's worth it, I guess. But that would I that would surprise me. But these things happen.
So I certainly hope he has a future in Baltimore, but we'll see where that goes. Let's move on back to the offensive line again. And Carson Vinson, definitely an interesting player. The Ravens had a luxury the start of the season of having two tackles under contract for 2+ years. Now, Stanley is technically under contract for 3 years, but we all know that was kind of a three to make two deal, or could have been. And Rosengarten, of course, the 3 years remaining on his rookie deal meant that the Ravens, for one of the few times in their history, had a chance to draft a true developmental left tackle. And I think it's fair to say that Vinson is left tackle or bust in this league, that he would not be a guard convert with his length and height and whatnot.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Yeah, whether he could slide over to right tackle. I mean, obviously, as long as Rosengarten's there, you wouldn't need him at right tackle unless there's an injury. So, but for the time being, could he? Can he? As you said, he's got the size. He looks the role. But obviously, he comes from a small school. And can an off season this off season really benefit him getting stronger, things like that, learning the playbook better, those kinds of things that rookies don't really get a great chance of doing, especially these days with the limited number of practices. They don't really, I mean, it's such a whirlwind for them from training for, the combine and then draft and then right into rookie camps and trying to find a house and all that kind of someplace to live and all that kind of stuff, where the grocery store is, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, hopefully he can take a big step next year. Because if they do need him, he will probably be the swing tackle next year if they feel comfortable, comfortable there. And then you don't have to go and not that the last two veteran swing tackles have been terribly expensive, both about 1.8 million, 1.9, but having a younger guy there could save you some money for other spots.
Save you some money and also lead you into your next starter as well, which is undoubtedly the most important component there. I'm positive on Vinson. I still don't think he's likely to play this year, but we've gone into the possible range now with what's happened at left tackle with Stanley and Noteboom. Noteboom's played very poorly. Stanley has played extremely poorly. And, when the last three games, he's been out there for two of them and he couldn't finish either
Finish,
time. He
yeah.
couldn't get beyond 21 snaps. Either time because he looks completely overmatched and hurt right now. So not impossible we see Carson Vinson at
Yeah.
some point in 25.
Yeah, I mean, it could be one of those last game of the year. Why not? If the season's over or last two games of the year and Stanley's, no sense in pushing Stanley out there with a bum ankle, and there's no reason to see Noteboom at that point. Now, you might not want him out there if you're afraid he's going to get Lamar killed or something like
I
that.
think you might be at a point where Lamar's not out there too.
But that's
So,
true too. Yep.
yeah, you certainly could see. I mean, all kinds of things are possible. If this season goes really south on the Ravens, I mean, there could be managed coaching changes. There could be the Ravens could be 1-9 if Lamar isn't back, and they just make the change in season, even though that's not the Ravens' way to do it. They could, at that point, they literally could be tanking for a top three or four draft pick.
Yeah.
If that were it, and that may be exactly the desired result, and getting Vinson is just a live fire additional benefit from it.
Yeah.
So,
He and Bullock together, you might see them both out there.
All right, Andrew Voorhees, the next guy. We talked about him briefly in the first show because Voorhees has a different spot than Falele, and I know people are down on both guards. And if I look at it for the year, I'm going to tell you how I have it scored for the year so far. But Voorhees, I have scored as 0.73 in raw score. Looks like his average adjustment has been right about 4.5 on that. So about 77.5. That puts him near the bottom of the C range. So he's like a point and a half above a C minus. Okay, but near the bottom of the C range. Not terrible, but certainly not exactly what you hope for in the third year after you've drafted the guy. You'd hope for better than that. And then Daniel Faalele is at 74 for the year and a similar kind of adjustment. So he'd be almost exactly in the same spot. So we're talking about guys that are on the CC minus border in both cases. you know, honestly, there's a lot, a whole lot of NFL teams that would love to have either one of them. Okay. Falele in particular is the 14th rated pass blocking guard by PFF. That tracks with what I've seen so far in terms of his ability to do that. I know there's all kinds of terrible pass blocking snaps out there and all kinds of indecision and wrong, you know, looking and not figuring out what he's supposed to do. Decisiveness and speed are both problems for Daniel Falele.
Yeah.
So you won't have problems finding bad snaps if you want to. My contention has always been that they're less valuable. Voorhees, his problems are a little more visible to me. I mean, in terms of what happens, he's had some pass blocking problems that are not the same as Falele, but still a guy I believe who has runway with the Ravens with two more years of team control. I would have to think they're gonna do everything they can to try and see what he's got, particularly given that they don't have a lot of answers along the whole offensive line right now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you got to also remember he redshirted his first year, so you know that makes a difference as well. I mean, this is his first year back, so to speak. So you know, hopefully, you know, an offensive lineman, it's not like a running back where you know the cutting and things like that. But certainly, their knees take a lot of punishment too. So you know, that could be another year stronger next year, could make a difference for him for sure.
Yeah, hopefully we have not really seen the kind of his power, his upper body power, have the kind of impact that we hoped it would coming out of the 38 reps at the combine. Everybody thought, wow, that kind of strength out of an offensive lineman. Unfortunately, that doesn't really translate well. Body type is really important, particularly at guard, and you'd much prefer to be a pear than an apple at guard. So that, you know, apple, as much as it sounds like a very round body type, pear is the one you want. You want your weight down in your hips. You want to have massive glutes and thighs. And an apple carries most of his weight around his belt, and they tend to be the taller, leaner, quote unquote, offensive linemen who carry their weight a little higher. Right. That's not a good thing for a guard anyway. All right, let's move on. We'll talk about Tez Walker. Now, you know, obviously disappointing. A lot of the young players are just, they're hurt or there's some other problem with them right now that's reduced in a lot of the cases in the appending UFAs. Their value is just lower than it would otherwise be. I mean, Likely and Linderbaum have been hurt. Charlie Kohler has been healthy, but Travis Jones has been hurt on the defense. Now we get back to Tez Walker. He's just in his second year, but it's a year we certainly will hope for a bigger step forward. A lot of ways it's been pretty good, but one way it has not been good is in terms of total snap count. He just hasn't had much. And we'd certainly like to see more from him more total impact plays.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, first two games, he looked pretty solid. Obviously, limited snaps, but you know, they got a lot of mouths to feed. You know, and DeAndre Hopkins is not seeing a lot of snaps, and he's been very productive when the balls. I mean, has there been an incompletion to him this year? I'm not even sure. Yeah,
there have been, but he's right up towards the top of the league in terms of yards per target too. Yeah. If you define it to a few enough targets.
Sure. Right. Yeah. You got to ratchet it down. Yeah. So, you know, and I mean, obviously he's going to block with the tight ends they have. It's going to be hard for Walker to really see a lot of playing time. But hopefully he can do enough this year to flash. And then, you know, next year, do you need that veteran D hop kind of guy, or do you just or is it time for Walker to, you know, take that spot? I love D-Hop. I always loved him. And, you know, obviously this season isn't so far turning out the way anybody expected. But I would love to see him back next year. But we'll get to him in a little bit too. But we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, certainly, whether or not he actually contributes to the comp formula or whatnot. With Walker, be entering year three next year, I'm going to really start to need to see something from him on the field. Obviously, you know, this was supposed to be the year for the Baltimore Ravens. So they had an enormous set of skill position players, and nobody's trying to trim it down, trying to get playing time for a Tez Walker in the middle of that. But it could come in the second half that, you know, a player like Hopkins might be potentially released before the season is over if the Ravens are far enough out of it. Could you see them doing that?
Well, I'd see probably more likely traded at the trade deadline. And I'm not going to get a big return. I would have to go back because he got traded trade deadline last year. I'm not sure. I don't remember what Kansas City traded for him, but and I think you could see that. I would be surprised. I would be surprised they would release him. I mean, Alec, we talked about Jaire Alexander yesterday. That's a little different because he's, whatever's going on. But I think Hopkins is just one of those guys. He's earned the respect of you don't cut him unless he says, cut me, and because I want to go play somewhere for a ring, and they try to accommodate that. Of course, he goes on after the trade deadline, he goes on waivers, so who knows who picks him up.
Right.
So it may not be where he'd want to go, so to speak, as we saw with Arizona did with Terrell Suggs many years back, and he said, I only want to go to Baltimore, and Kansas City picked him up because they had the higher priority. So that's why I think it's probably more likely if it gets to that point over the next couple of weeks that they would try to accommodate him and find him a spot with a contender and get a swap pick or a fifth or sixth or whatever round pick. I don't think you're gonna get much more for him than that.
A fifth round pick would be that would be very hard to pass up. Very hard to pass up. A sixth round pick, I could understand why they might not want to do it, but I mean, we just did a. I'd love to get your thoughts. I'll talk to you off air about this. We did a trade show in terms of what the value of these various players were, and I mean, there's just not a ton of value
No.
in all of the Ravens appending UFAs, as much as we love to think, yeah, we can trade, so and so for a second, and this guy's going to draw first kind of thing. I mean, the notion that you're going to get a first round pick for a Tyler Linderbaum or a second round pick for that matter, that's long gone.
I mean, I don't see how that's, I mean, because you're talking a half a year. And then the new other team has to give him a big deal or franchise him. So yeah, I don't that, yeah, they don't they have tradable pieces, but there's not a huge amount of value. So you have to wonder, if it's even worth it in some cases.
Yeah, I'm certainly concerned about it. And do you have a sense that, by the way, which way the Ravens would go, or do you think there's just the Bears game is an incredible leverage game potentially that determines how they react to the trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I think if they lose the Bears game, I mean, I think the season's over. I mean, they have to win. They've got to put three straight wins together, I'm gonna say, to make it. And that's not even, that and it's only two games till the trade deadline. So, yeah. So I think, I mean, they have to win the Bears game. What's it? Is the Dolphins the next game?
Dolphins, and it's a
Yeah.
Thursday on the road, so it's kind
Right.
of a crappy
Yeah.
situation like that.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, those are two. I mean, you need to beat, I mean, you have to beat the Bears at home because you're at home. And the Dolphins are in such disarray. If you go to Miami and lay an egg there, I mean, do you think people are calling for Harbaugh's head now? That the people go crazy at that point. So they have to win these two. I could see. I could see them making trades like the Oway trade, where they're getting a piece back that, maybe they're looking for a more controllable piece. I mean, not that, I know that's a more of a baseball term, but where they're, and I know Gilman's not that, but where they're bringing somebody in who could, like, and I think Andrews would be the kind of that guy. You trade him because he's going to be a free agent. You're not anticipating re-signing him, but you might get something back that you feel could help you at a different position, whether it's for this year or for the future as well. So even if they do win these next two games, I could still see Andrews being potentially traded if they can get, an edge or a D tackle back in here, somebody to help out the D line. So that I think Andrews has more value there than getting a fifth round pick for him, whatever it might be.
Okay. All right. I could understand. Depends what the pick is, definitely matters. If it's a six, I'm uninterested. If it's a fifth, we got to listen because, he probably is going to generate a fifth round comp pick in 2027 if he leaves the Ravens. Fair enough.
Yeah, I would think so, but that's 2 years down the road.
Well,
So,
that's the point, is that we get a 26 fifth or a 27 fifth. I
Right.
think 26 fifth. And there's $3.5 million, I think, of cap savings if you trade him after week nine.
Yeah. So yeah, because he's got a $7 million salary and that's halfway through. So yeah, that makes these nice. When they moved the trade deadline back,
isn't that nice?
went to 18 weeks. It made a little, you know, because it was early. It was week seven when it was 16 games. So it wasn't, you know,
every day companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game. Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Couldn't just look at the number and go, boom, there it is.
All right, one more developmental player to go, and that's Lajonte Wester, who's looked good as a punt returner with the exception of the fumble that was very fortunately washed out by a illegal downfield penalty from the Rams. But he's looked very good in terms of punt returns otherwise, and he's hardly been on the field as an offensive player, 10 or 11 snaps, I think it is, over about three or four games. One of my problems with the Monken offense this year is not making enough use of their two significant misdirection assets in Mitchell and Wester.
Yeah, I can see that. And the problem, of course, with those kind of things is you put them on the field, you have to get them on. You can't have them on the field and then give them the ball every time, you know, so right. You've got to get them out there for more snaps than just, you know, two, so to speak. So, and that's where it becomes a problem of how do you fit them in with all the other, you know, with all the other mouths to feed. I mean, who was always doing jet sweeps under, I guess it was Giro. It was like every time he came on, it was a jet sweep.
Okay. Yeah. It's like a Tandon Doss type receiver, but it's not Tandon Doss.
No. It was a speedier guy. He'd be on and it was like they knew it was coming because he would only come on for four snaps and he'd get it twice at the four snaps. Yeah. So, you know, that's the hard part, I think. You know, as fans, we probably don't think about that as much of, you know, so if you want to give him the ball four times, he's got to be out there 10 to 12 times, you know, something like that.
Right.
Or eight times if you're going to just give him one jet sweep or one whatever you're going to do, you know, with Wester getting him in space or whatever. So that's kind of the problem is who are you taking off for all those times just to set that one play up, you know?
I don't think of it as setting up that one play. I think of it as the Ravens have three exits that all need to be guarded legitimately. And any time that Harbaugh has said, any time that Mitchell comes on the field, they know he's getting the ball. My immediate reaction is great. That's exactly what you want. You want the other team to be thinking exactly that. He's not, he doesn't even come on that often to just replace Henry one for one. He's more typical, or he is often used as a pony guy who's either a second guy in the backfield or he's off playing flanker. And then, you know, the other team has to worry about him just the way they have to worry about Lamar Jackson. So it's three guys now instead of just two that they're concerned about. For that to work, there have to be multiple things you can do out of jet motion with Wester. He's got to be able to jet across the formation, or Mitchell for that matter. Mm. He's got to be able to go across the formation and then run some sort of a route from there that can, you know, be very effective. But I'm at a loss in terms of not being able to use these guys. And I do think it's kind of a waste to use Flowers there for reasons we talked about earlier that we don't need to go over again.
Sure.
All right, so let's talk about the next group, which is veterans playing for market value. 14 guys in this category. We're not going to hit on every one. There are some free agents in the group. We'll go over them quickly. Mark Andrews is a free agent. Ben Cleveland is a free agent. Remarkably, it's just become entirely forgotten this year. Yeah. DeAndre Hopkins is a free agent. Nick Moore is a free agent at 33 years old after three professional football seasons. Joe Noteboom is a free agent. I don't think we're going to miss him. Patrick Ricard, a free agent. And Tylan Wallace, a free agent. So certainly a lot of guys who have some significant years of play with the Ravens. Let's talk about those guys first that are going to be free agents. Who do you think is likely to come back out of that group?
I would say Ricard, just because the fullback position isn't used by a lot of teams, and honestly, he took a pay cut this last contract compared to what he was prior contract. So. And he seems like a guy that loves it here. And so I think he is. I think Tylan Wallace probably as well. I think he's fit into that special teams, you know, fourth or fifth wide receiver. You feel comfortable with the guys get hurt. You know, he can get out there and give you some good reps. But I don't think a lot, obviously, as we saw this past offseason, I don't think anybody's knocking his door down either. But so I think he's kind of one of those special teams legacy players almost that the Ravens seem to have a few of here and there over the years. I think Andrews is probably gone. And I'd love to have D-Hop back. I don't think he is. But, you know, it would, I just that's a personal thing. I wanted him from the, you know, when he was drafted going back that far. So I'm not letting go of that.
All right, let's go back a moment here. And I want to talk about Ricard and Wallace, because they, each of them were qualified for the VSB last year, which is money you can pay above a vet's minimum salary that you can split up between up to two players. And it turned out Ricard got all the money and Wallace got a deal that was above the league minimum, but had void years tacked on to basically pay for it. Those two guys, Ricard, first of all, I'm getting to be more of the opinion that it's time to move on to Ricard because of the accumulation of injuries, not because he's a bad player. I think he's been good when he's been on the field, but we saw what Lucas Scott could do a little bit. I'm a little bit befuddled that he didn't get a chance as opposed to Zaire Mitchell-Payton earlier in the year.
Yeah. I'm surprised by that too. I mean, you talk about Falele spinning around and not hitting anything. I mean, I don't, Zaire Mitchell-Payton. First game, he looked great. And I don't know if that was just because Henry was running by everybody. But after that, he's looked pretty horrible. I thought Lucas Scott would get a shot, you know, and there've been a couple of weeks. There was at least one week they only brought one guy up from the practice squad. So, it depends on, you know, actives and inactives too. You're not going to bring a guy up just to have him inactive. So I guess the numbers just didn't work out that week, but yeah, I would have thought we would have seen him. Obviously we don't know what practice looks like, you know, those kinds of things, but no, I can get you. I mean, obviously Ricard has put his body through a lot, you know, ramming into defensive players like crazy. So, you could see that the accumulation of injuries. I mean, if he comes back on this same type of deal, I think it's kind of hard to, you know, to pass up because it's not terribly expensive on the cap. Now, if somebody out there offers him a 3-year deal, you know, then maybe, you know, maybe you just say, okay, well, we'll try to find our next Pat Ricard somewhere. And maybe we have him already.
I think it's still about 450 cheaper. Maybe I don't have the right amount exactly correct to get Lucas Scott. So, I mean, you get, it's about 2/3 of the price still relative to the vet min, not forgetting the other side. And the other side is not really a cost itself, but it is an opportunity cost to giving that money to somebody else.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's all, you know, that's all part of the salary cap puzzle is, you know, sometimes you have to decide when it's time to move on to the, from this guy, because while you still like him, you know, his the cost has gone up, or, you know, the concern for injuries and, you know, having him sit on IR or something like that, or miss half of a season, like it looks like Ricard's kind of close to have done, you know, that definitely factors in.
All right. I think you hit on a lot of the other players here who are going to be free agents. So a couple other people in this group, Rashad Bateman now on a very long-term deal. I think he keeps him in Baltimore through 29. Is that correct? Potentially.
Yes. Yes. And I've seen a lot of talk about him as a trade candidate, which I'm not really understanding. You know, when you look at the, I mean, if there's some sort of disconnect again with he and Lamar, and I'm not saying there is, you know, then I could see moving on from, and I know there was the one ball where he gave up on, so to speak. Was that
Cooper Rush
Detroit game?
Yeah. Yeah, it was more recent. It was more recent. Quarterback. Yeah.
Okay. I thought he lost it in the sun. Honestly, he didn't say that. So I'll take his answer as opposed to mine. But if he's not here, I mean, if he is, there's very little cap savings for trading him this year. I'm not. Can you get a fourth for him? Can you get a third? I don't think you get a third. So fourth is probably the best you get. But he's only about $6.5 million on the cap next year. There'd be $7+ million in dead money on the cap if you trade him.
Yep.
Six is a great number for number two wide receiver.
I mean, it's not just 6 1 year. It's 6, 10, 12, 14. I mean, the contract is incredibly cheap for the Ravens.
Yeah.
And in a sense, it's almost like a booby trap to the Ravens that at some point he's going to hold out.
Right.
Because the money is just so utterly reasonable. But if, I mean, wide receiver salaries have gone through the roof.
Yeah.
And particularly for the top guys, and Bateman looked like he possibly could become that. This should not be lost on people. Rashad Bateman last year had the greatest ever yards per target of any receiver in Ravens history.
Mm-hmm.
And ever 10 and a half mm-hmm. yards. It's just yeah. never been done. So
yeah, I don't understand that talk, but you know, maybe it had to do with that one pass. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, and it looked like, oh, there's Bateman of old, you know. Yeah. But I don't feel like that's been him for the last, you know, again, don't base, you know, your opinion on one play.
There you go.
You know, yeah, there's a lot more plays out there. And obviously he's not putting up the numbers he did last year, but nobody is with Cooper Rush, a quarterback, let's face it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people had exaggerated ideas about how many targets he would get, because whenever anybody says he's going to get 1,400 yards, he's going to get 1,300 yards, I say break it down for me. Give me the number of targets and the number of yards per target. And then all of a sudden they can't make the math work.
Yeah, no. So yeah, he's going to get 14. You know, D Hop's going to get 1,000, and Zay's going to get 15. I mean, that's going to be what, a 7,000 yard passing season for Lamar.
Yeah, if you get the tight ends in there, no doubt about it.
Yeah, exactly. 500, 600, 700 each.
So Bateman, honestly, one of the real good value contracts the Ravens have. I just hope it plays out the way it does. Derrick Henry. Whether you feel like it's worked out for him this year or not, he's here and he's here to stay. There's no moving on from that deal. Now, another guy that there is moving on from next year, and he's one of four guys on the roster they could potentially cut and save a little bit of money, is Justice Hill.
Yes. And I think that, you know, obviously he's been less impactful this year, and we're only halfway through, or not even halfway through. His blocking is still good, you know, but you can't, you know, if there's, you know, $3.25 million there in savings, that's not insubstantial. And is that worth it? You know, is it worth keeping him around for, you know, his pass blocking when you've got a guy like Keaton Mitchell, or maybe Ali can step into that role. Maybe Ali could be a better blocker than Mitchell. You know, you've got these guys, and that's why you have young guys to, you know, step in. You know, we're talking about the RFA tender. You know, you save three, you save, you know, 3.25 when you cut Hill. And if you give Mitchell the RFA tender, it's only about 250,000 more than that. So that kind of, there's your balancing act of, you know, you didn't have to cut money from some other spot. You've got it right there in the running back room.
I'm with you there. I think that's the likely thing. It's unfortunate because he's really a valuable player to the Ravens in terms of versatility. They could put him back on special teams if they needed, if they wanted more of a role for Mitchell or even Ali, they could put him back on into a, you know, 10 snap a game special teams role and really alleviate some of the problems they've had with that. There's none of the other players that I think are worth talking about. Cooper Rush, is the Ravens have an out after 1 year?
Yes. I'm trying to remember. It's about $3 million in dead money next year, but you know, it is what it is. There's still cap savings there. I mean, they only save about $600,000 on the cap next year if he's not here, but that would be a move that is not done because about money. It's time to move on. Yeah. yeah, for sure.
So that would be understandable. Yeah. They would pay more than that for his replacement, which is the basic question you need to answer in terms of cap management. Right, Brian?
Right. Yeah. But you're not going to, you're still not going to hang on to him for those reasons, I don't think, in this case. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next group. And this is the veteran cap value concerns. We had four of these guys on the defense, and that's really a lot to have at one particular time. There's only one on offense, and it's an unfortunate one because he just signed his new deal. And that's Ronnie Stanley, who is showing all the signs of the injury again. He's playing, he's trying like hell to get out there on the field for his teammates. And you know, if you think the Ravens are giving up on the season, on Harbaugh, on the team, any of that stuff, I think Ronnie Stanley is the best example I could point to as they're not giving up. He really wants to try and get out there. It just doesn't seem like he can do it physically.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's unfortunately, here we are, you know, two contracts and then he gets injured. Obviously the other one was the next day, it seemed like, but this time, you know, I guess he got through two games before he tweaked his ankle, but yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, he's not going anywhere because there's guaranteed money on his deal next year. So it's really if this, you know, if the season spirals down, he's absolutely a guy you put on IR and get, you know, give him that extra month or two to, you know, start getting his ankle back together as opposed to throwing him out there. And again, maybe there's, you know, we mentioned Vincent earlier. Maybe there's your chance to get, you know, to get a look at Vincent out there or whoever else. Or if they, you know, the trade deadline, they bring somebody in perhaps that way as well. If they feel it, you know, that it's just not worth, you know, risking Ronnie anymore. And it's time to, you know, get him healed up.
Yeah. With you and, just hope you can get a good 26 out of him because the Ravens are going to pay for that no matter what. In 27, yep, they have the ability to release him, but next year, $28.3 million if they release him. So
yeah,
they could do a post June 1, I guess, and maybe save a little, which just means that they spread out that money over 2 years.
Yes, they could. Yeah, but that's still a lot of money to take. And actually, no, because his salary next year is guaranteed.
It's guaranteed. There you go.
Yeah, because he's got his salary and a option bonus, and they're both fully guaranteed. So yeah, he's not going anywhere.
Okay, it's really tough news, obviously, for the Ravens in terms of their cap space there. And honestly, having him and Matt Ibike each in a position, and we hope that both of them are back on the field next year. I'm not particularly confident that it's going to happen with Matt Ibike, to be sure. And I probably no more than 50% confident it's going to happen for Stanley. I don't know where you would be on those two. Maybe it doesn't pay to speculate anyway.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully Stanley can, like I said, if he's got to play out the season on the ankle, but my, I, you know, I have a feeling at some point he's going on IR, whether it's and whether they hope to bring him back after four games and just, you know, let it settle down, so to speak, or five games or six games. But I have a feeling he's, you know, I mean, because if you can only play half of a game, and we'll see, this bye week is obviously, if this bye week was enough, you know, to help and get it straightened out. But these next two games, kind of the same thing with the trade deadline, I think it's going to speak all for Ronnie. And if it's not a go, then I think he's going on IR, and we'll see where the season goes from there. And if, you know, if he can come back at the end of the season and they're still in contention, then, you know, more power to him. But otherwise, then they keep him on the shelf for November, December, and give him that extra 2 months to get better for next year.
It's a bold call to say the Ravens will do that, because they really haven't done that for any of the other players. They've let them be walking wounded so far during the season. But I guess things would be different if you're 1-6 than if you're 3-5 or 2-6 versus 3-5 even would be probably a significant
difference. Huge difference. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The last group is a transitional group. Now, these are guys I don't think have any future on the Ravens. And this list is universal in terms of it includes everybody who's on any level of the Ravens roster, including the practice squad, IR, PUP, et cetera, the regular 53. But the eight guys I see as transitional who don't necessarily have any sort of future with the Ravens are Tyler Huntley, Cornelius Johnson, the wide receiver on the practice squad, Keith Kirkwood, and he's been there a couple of years on the practice squad, has gotten a couple of the snaps with the team, Jared Lichtenhan, who's a backup offensive tackle, rookie this year out of Oregon, Jared Penning. Yes, he's the brother of the other Penning the penalty magnet.
Yes.
Lucas Scott, who could have a future with the team, Zaire Mitchell-Payton, and Dayton Wade, who potentially could have been a guy who could have helped the Ravens as a kick returner. I don't think any of them have an obvious future with the team. I always say I think it's possible that one or two of them might ascend. This group is frankly better than the defensive group, I think, in terms of having a couple possibilities like that. Who would you see as a possibility in that group?
You know, I mean, I could see Huntley back next year. And obviously it depends on if he plays more and, you know, how that plays out. But he certainly looked a lot better than Cooper Rush. And he'll be cheap. He'll still be cheap to come back. And, you know, he's got a history here. And, you know, he and Lamar are tight. So I could see that as a possibility. But a lot of that depends on also, you know, what happens with the coaching staff. Because if a whole new coaching staff, then they don't have that same, comfort level with him, connection. So, I think Lucas Scott will be back. The practice squad guys will, you know, most of them will re-sign after the season to 1 year contracts for 2026. And I would think he would, because that will be probably before they know what's going to happen with Ricard. So I think a couple of the other guys probably will too, but I agree. I don't know that there's any real opportunity here, or, you know, even a chance.
Yeah. It's not a great thing. And you look at these guys, all of them, well, not, it's not true. Not all of them. Some of them are young players like Lichtenhan or Scott, or even Zaire Mitchell-Payton. He'll be entering his second year because he'll have accrued a season at this point. But those guys could be back because they still are first year players. You know, they're not R's anymore, but they're ones on the roster, right, which means they still have 4 years effectively of team control. So that would have value.
Right. I'm sorry.
Some of the other guys like Kirkwood and Huntley, they don't have any place long term with the team because they're all 1 year.
Right, every year. And you know, a lot of these guys, they're going to be cheap. Mitchell Payton will be an exclusive rights free agent, so he'll get tendered. Doesn't mean he's going to make the team next year. Plus, you got the offseason roster is 90 guys, so you got to fill it up with somebody. And that's why a lot of these guys will resign. Now, some of them will be released after, you know, the mini camp. It always seems like a couple of guys after the first rookie mini camp, they're okay, well, we like this younger guy better. So We're going to, and that's not a cap issue. It's just, you know, we think this guy might have more promise. We've seen you for a couple of years now, and you're not going, you're not moving the needle, but this guy could. So, you know, and he's your same position. So you're out. So, you know, those kinds of things will happen. But I think a lot of those names, but again, as you said, they're transitional. They're not going to most likely make an impact ever.
Yeah.
All right. Would Abila call him Jags?
That it's fine by me if you or Billick want to do that. I don't like the term, but
I won't use it.
Brian, always a pleasure talking football with you, and whenever the cap is involved or even just have a good football conversation, you're a very, very level-headed guy. Tell folks where they can find your work online.
Sure. So articles on Russell Street Report. We do articles when there's, you know, some major signing, release, whatever it might be, contract extension. Hopefully we'll get a couple of those. They usually do, you know, towards December, late in the year, they try to use up, and they do have a pretty ample amount of cap space this year. A lot of times they'll try to get a guy done. Ricard was a guy they did a few years back in his first big deal. Marcus Peters, they did at the end of the year, after acquiring him in the trade. That way you get 5 years to prorate a bonus. And if you get it in that last month of the year, that's less dead money down the road from that contract if it doesn't work out or the player gets hurt or whatever it might be. So, a lot of teams like to get that first year proration at the end of the year, so you don't have to worry about that. Otherwise, they carry that money over, so it's not a money thing, but it's getting rid of that potential dead money in the future. So we'll probably see something like that. So be an article about that. And then otherwise, when it's breaking news, it's pretty much on X and Twitter, or X/Twitter. And, trying to put the numbers together when we they're reported and see what it means for this year and then the future.
And he's at Ravens Salary Cap on Twitter. Make sure you follow him. He's one of the really good sources. And if there's been a move made, that's the first thing I do is I look at his Twitter handle to find out what he knows about the contract so far and what he's put out there. So really appreciate you, Brian. And as I go through and I do this, I use OTC a lot also, but I also refer to your notes on the contract values and whatnot that are going on. So I really appreciate your work. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. As always, we'll have regular content starting up again next week I'll give you the whole layout, the map of the shows as they go through the week. We have two shows on the defense that come out on Tuesday, two more on the offense on Wednesday, usually Know Your Foe on Thursday, Friday Morning GM on Friday, two more matchup shows on Saturday. And then usually on Sunday, we have One Last Thing, which has been an interesting back and forth with two different people kind of sharing the hosting duties this year that I've kind of enjoyed. But thanks for listening. Brian, thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely. Anytime, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.